You have been the one song of those who thirst after absolute power, but the interest of the state requires that its affairs should be conducted in secret. But the more such arguments disguise themselves under the mask of public welfare, the more oppressive is the slavery to which they will lead. Better that right counsel be known to enemies than that the evil secrets of tyrants should be concealed from the citizens. They who can treat secretly of the affairs of a nation have it absolutely under their authority. As they plot against the enemy in time of war, so do they against the citizens in time of peace.
Coming to you simultaneously from the center of the universe and deep in the heart of nowhere. AboveTopSecret.com presents the 2 out of 3 Amigos Conspiracy Show with your host, the Skeptic Overlord and Springer.
And now, prepare your tinfoil hats, align your ciphers, engage your cone of silence, lock your bunkers, and switch proxy servers. The 2 out of 3 Amigos.
Special Edition.
Hello and good evening. From deep in the heart of Indian Territory, this is Springer from AboveTopSecret.com. And with me tonight by the miracle that is Skype, we've got...
Well, listening to your voice is not that much of a miracle. If Skype was truly a miracle, you'd sound better, but I guess this is what we get. This is the Skeptic Overlord from the center of the universe, Midtown Manhattan.
Well, some people call it the center of the universe, and some people call it the center of something else, but by God, it's where you're at, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So what do we, I heard that alarm and you saying special edition in some deep echo chamber. What are we talking about tonight?
Bill, we have got the hottest story on the internet tonight for our listeners, blessed as they are. And it's just either going to be the biggest story of human history or a really good internet hoax.
Why would it be the... Well, what is the story? Let's fill us in here.
Serpo, the Project Serpo, S-E-R-P-O, which, according to the information that's been relayed so far, the really brief synopsis of this is, there's a group supposedly buried deep within the bowels of the intel community of the United States government who claims that back in the late 1960s, our government did an exchange program with aliens from a planet in the Zeta Reticuli star cluster. Now, isn't that enough to make you wonder?
Yeah, we've certainly touched on this a couple times in our 2 out of 3 Amigos show, and each time it sounds the same. I'm sorry.
Well, the alarms went off tonight because through the magic of Skype and the awesome power of AboveTopSecret.com.
Wait, before Skype was a miracle, now it's just magic?
Yeah, well, you said it wasn't that good.
Okay.
Anyway, we've got the gentleman who started the website that has brought Project Serpo to the internet, a guy named Bill Ryan, who is a resident and citizen of Britain, Great Britain, in the United Kingdom, has been kind enough to join us today for an Well, I don't know if it's an exclusive interview or not, but it's certainly exclusive to Above Top Secret. And basically is going to tell the whole story in his own words. And I think this is a great opportunity for our membership and our visitors and even the folks who just listen to us on the podcast to hear, you know, listen to the man tell the story, because I think you can really get a better sense of where he's coming from listening to someone talk than versus just reading, you know, what they type on a board.
Right, and that website he started is www.serpo.org. And quite a large discussion thread has begun and evolved on AboveTopSecret.com. It's how many replies are on this thing? No, there's over 60 pages, isn't there?
Yeah, it's banging 70 pages, and let me pull it up.
And we've, for the purposes of our podcasting audience, we've created a shortcut to that thread. Just go to www.abovetopsecret.com/SERPO, S-E-R-P-O, and you'll get right to the thread.
Making it easy for the population.
Yes.
We have got 1,393 replies to that thread.
Yeah, it has 70, quickly become one of our most popular threads.
Oh, yeah. 100,210 views and 70 pages of content.
Yeah, so it's certainly a barn burner of a thread.
Without question. And it's really kind of, you know, every once in a while a topic, a story, or a situation becomes, you know, kind of a fire on the internet, gets that good buzz working for it. And SERPO is definitely well on its way. I wouldn't say it's a, you know, it's an internet-wide phenomenon yet, like John Titor became, or Val Hall's great FEMA post. That was another example of a barn burner. And, of course, the Boeing 757 struck the Pentagon threat, another example. But I think this one is on its way, and that's why I'm really pleased to bring everybody, Bill Ryan tonight, in his own words, the man himself, who is, by all counts, the genuine and innocent messenger. This guy claims to be absolutely not involved with any of the actual characters or actors in this saga. He is simply a guy that was on the list, the email list that all this kind of started on, and thought it would be a really good public service to create a website and just basically put it out there. And put it out there he did.
Well, you know what? We should stop talking and start talking to Bill.
Let's do it.
So quickly, before we get to the interview with Bill Ryan, I want to clue everyone in that this is a pre-recorded interview that we recorded earlier. Time zone differences require that we speak with Bill earlier today. And Skype wasn't so magical this afternoon.
No, it wasn't.
there were some weird echoes involved in especially Mark's questions. So what we've done is we've gone back and re-recorded the questions from Mark, and I've dubbed those in. But otherwise, the interview is going precisely as recorded this afternoon. So, without further ado, I'd like to introduce to you Bill Ryan, webmaster for SERPO.org and internet mouthpiece for Mr. Anonymous.
Thank you, Bill. I'd just like to say hello to all of your listeners there. About a couple of months ago, I'd barely heard of Above Top Secret, and I was invited onto the SERPO thread, and I jumped in there probably about two-thirds of the way through the current length. It's been a real pleasure to be part of the Above Top Secret forum, and to any of those forum members who are listening to this, I'd just like to say hi and thank you very much for extending such a warm welcome to me. The overview of the SERPO situation is confused, I guess, is the best way to describe it. Your listeners will know that 10 weeks ago now, Mr. Anonymous, as we like to call him, started releasing information to a private email list that was moderated by an English teacher in Los Angeles with a strong personal interest in UFOs. His name was Victor Martinez. I happen to be on that list. I'm not a UFO researcher. I'm not an author. I'm not a lecturer. I'm not a spook. I'm just a civilian with what I hope is an intelligent lay interest in the subject. And I took it upon myself to create a website because about 10 days into the release of all this information, it just became so clear to me that it was very important to archive this so that the broader public could take a look at all of the data and make up their own minds about it. And at that point, we didn't know how long the whole thing was going to last, but it seemed to be a bit of a rolling ball. Now, at the moment, we don't know whether that ball has stopped rolling or not. The last tranche of information released by Mr. Anonymous was back on the 21st of December. He gave us 11 different installments. I have a very strong personal hunch that he has not gone away. I can't prove that. I hope that's the case. I hope that this hasn't stopped. But a couple of moments ago, I just mentioned that the situation was confusing. And this is because we don't know for sure the context in which Mr. Anonymous has been operating. Essentially, he's telling an extraordinary story. And in order to evaluate this story in the way that researchers like to, we need hard data. We need hard data about the source. We need to know where the source is getting his information from. We need to know what's going on behind the scenes, what the motivations are, the whole context for any release of information. And we just don't have that in solid terms. A lot of the debate on the SERPA thread in the ATS forum is just trying to get to the bottom of what might be going on behind the scenes. We have little hard data to go on. We have an extraordinary story. My own personal stance on this is that even if this is not wholly true, 100% true, and a lot of people think that there's definitely truth there, but maybe there's falsehoods in there. And if there are falsehoods, we don't know how the falsehoods have got there. They could be, they could have arrived accidentally. We don't know where Mr. Anonymous is getting his information from. We don't know if he's fed the information from other sources, etc., etc., etc. But even if a proportion of this is true, it's still the story of the millennium. Because what we're talking about is we're talking about the visit of 12 American astronauts to another planet nearly 40 light years away in 1965 from 1978. This is such an extraordinary claim that even if 10% of this is true, it still needs to be taken seriously. The only circumstances in which we should just dismiss the whole thing is if the entire thing is invented. Personally, I'm convinced that that is not the case.
I would like to join Bill in thanking Bill Ryan for joining us today, and I really, really do appreciate it. My personal belief is that SERPO, if it's nothing else, is absolutely a fascinating story. And in that light, I think that's proven out definitely on our website, www.abovetopsecret.com, by virtue of the fact we have a 66-page and counting thread running on this very, very same story. And, Bill, I think you present yourself well, and it is our great pleasure to have you here today. Now, I've got a list of questions that, have come from our members and from a few other people, specifically Centrist, our member Centrist, who I understand you have formed some sort of a reasonably good relationship with, and I think that's great. And I want to get right to them. First off on the list is, do you have any idea how Mr. Anonymous got on Victor's list?
I really don't know the answer to that one. I know that I know from what Mr. Anonymous himself said in one of his early postings, he said that he had been, quote, monitoring Victor Martinez's email list for some 6 months. Basically, he's been lurking on the list. And for people to understand the context of that, Victor Martinez runs a pretty simple system. It's done on an open CC basis, where when this information was first released in early November, from memory, there was something like about 120 people. And every message was CC'd openly to everyone, so all the email addresses were visible. Now, some of those email addresses contain very obvious names, like info@disclosureproject.org or whatever it is. Others, as email addresses can be, are just a random sequence of numbers and letters. And one of the things that's intriguing, of course, is that Mr. Anonymous is in that group somewhere. We just don't know who he is. Now, of course, Victor Martinez knows who he is, and Victor Martinez should be able to answer the question of how come that particular person behind the email address got on his list in the first place? I'm afraid I don't know the answer to that question, but he was there for 6 months before he started posting.
Okay, good. Now, the next obvious question is how long has Victor's list been around, and, you know, how long have you known about it, or how long has it been around?
I don't, actually. I myself only turned up on the list almost at exactly the same time as Mr. Anonymous started posting in early November. So I don't have a history of this either. I believe, from what I've heard other people discuss, that it was around for at least a year beforehand, but it might have been around for some time before that. I know that Victor's interest in UFOs has been longstanding. I'm afraid I don't know the exact answer to that, but it's been around, I think, for a while.
Okay, fair enough. Now, the next question is, exactly how did you, Bill Ryan, become acquainted with Victor and his list? You know, did he track you down, or did you find out about him and track him down, or exactly how did that come to be that you ended up on this fairly incredible email list?
Right. Victor Martinez moderates several lists, which feature completely different populations. The one which I was a member of, simply because somebody who I knew had recommended that I subscribe to it and I was moderately interested in it, was a 500-strong list that was basically political in nature. It was about Bush and foreign policy and Iraq and so on and so forth. I subscribed to that list, and I've been a member for about a year. And during the course of that year, I'd corresponded with Victor about one or two things, and he kind of got the feeling of just who I was a little bit, I think. And I've never actually asked him this, but my guess is that he shrewdly judged, although we'd never spoken about UFOs, I think he judged that I would be interested in Mr. Anonymous's information, and he put me on the list himself. At first, I didn't even know what this information was that was coming through, because I hadn't requested it, and I didn't even know he had a UFO list. But he put me on the list something like the 4th of November, after Mr. Anonymous's first post on the 2nd of November, and I assume that he put me on the list because there was this very interesting thing happening, and he thought that I might be interested to be part of it. Basically, okay. He just invited me into the auditorium just to listen,
okay.
Which is exactly what I did.
All right. Good. Now, my next question relates directly to possible credibility of Victor, because really that's all we have to go on is, you know, what Victor presents. So how much, if any, firsthand information or proof has Victor given you that shows you that Mr. Anonymous is actually not Victor himself just generating this? In other words, has there been any proof to show that Victor is not Mr. Anonymous just simply typing all this up and presenting it as though he received these emails through his email list, when in fact, really, it's just Victor doing it all and loving the attention?
It's an interesting question, and it's an obvious one. If we're really knuckling down and trying to be meticulous researchers about this, obviously it's a hypothesis that Victor is inventing this information himself. And, I mean, one would almost be irresponsible if one didn't ask that question. Now, I've been in private correspondence with Victor about a lot of things behind the scenes. I'm completely convinced. I would stake everything I own on the fact that Victor is not sourcing this information himself. For example, the last thing we heard from Mr. Anonymous, as I think I mentioned earlier, is on the 21st of December. Victor is tearing his hair out, wondering if there's anything else that he can do to get the information through, wondering whether he's done anything wrong, whether he's upset him, if there's anything that he could have done to make things go better. And these, of course, are things that he has not been sharing publicly. I'm sure he wouldn't mind my saying this. He's responding to this in a very human way. He's very frustrated. He's told me personally, for example, that he realizes that it was a mistake for him to publish what Mr. Anonymous had said, which is that photographs would be forthcoming. Mr. Anonymous said this on the 8th of December, I think it was. And the smart thing to do, of course, is to, as we say in business terms, is to under-promise and to over-deliver. And what's happened here, of course, is so far that's been over-promised and under-delivered, which means that you're bound to disappoint your customers. Victor is trained in journalism, and I think what happened is that, understandably, he was very excited when he got the information from Anonymous that these photographs would be coming soon. And so he naturally wanted to pass information on, as the editor of any newspaper would. It's like, next week, be sure to buy the magazine, because you'll never regret it, and it's going to be an amazing publication. If there was a commercial interest, that would have been a smart thing to do, but of course there isn't a commercial interest. There's no reason why Victor should have said that. And the whole point of my just going into that little story there is that Victor regrets having said that. It would have been much smarter in PR terms for Victor not to have said anything about the photographs. And actually, I've regretted that myself. Even if Victor said it to his small group of 100-odd, maybe I shouldn't have put that on the website, for thousands of people now are emailing me saying, where are the photographs? And I'm thinking, oh boy, I wish I hadn't said that. But on the other hand, my commitment right from the start was to be an honest messenger and just to tell people what was happening. That was what was happening. But actually, I'm diverging a little bit from your original story, because you asked me about the nature of proof. We've had a lot of circumstantial evidence. It's, in my view, it's strong circumstantial evidence that this story is real. It's not proof. It's not the kind of thing that you can go to the New York Times with. If we did something like that, the editor would say, okay, you know, show us the source, bring him into the office, or let's have a statement from the president, or show us some hardware. You know, apart from that, it's just a rumor. And there are a zillion rumors all over the internet. You can't get away from them. I can detail some of the circumstantial evidence, if you like. Is this the right moment for it, or is that part of a subsequent question?
No, I think you've answered the question pretty well. That basically, beyond email headers that are evident in the email list, that Mr. Anon is certainly not coming from Victor's TV web email address. That's really about all we have at this moment.
Yeah. I don't know what Mr. Anonymous's email address is. I've never seen any of his emails. Occasionally, Victor has forwarded me a small comment from Anonymous, but all he's done is he's copied and pasted the words.
To
answer a question that you haven't asked, because a lot of people have asked a very good question, well, why would this guy have chosen Victor Martinez in the first place? Or is this actually anticipating a subsequent question also?
Go ahead.
Okay. Once again, we're guessing. The people who give the story the benefit of the doubt are assuming that this was a reasonably select group of informed individuals, which consist of many names that people registered with ATS will recognize. They are their lecturers, their authors, their researchers. As you will see yourself, from having recently joined the list, you can see that there's a fairly strong ufological community there on Victor's List. And everyone was wanted to test this out, to see how the story would fly, how it would received, how it would be received, then arguably this is quite a good way to do it.
Yeah, I agree.
At the end of his first post, back on the 2nd of November, Mr. Anonymous actually closed with the words, I'd like to know, I'm just looking at it now, I'd like to hear what others say about this. So it's like he was kind of saying, well, you know, if anyone's interested, I'm going to go on. You know, if you all tell me to get back in my box, then I'm not going to bother. And of course, there was a very strong response, which encouraged him to continue.
Sure.
What a cynic would say, and I have to present both sides of this, is that Victor's Web TV system is very primitive. It's not a computer. It's just basically a specialist email system. It deletes all of the messages that are received by default within 96 hours. And I was personally horrified, I have to say. None of this is against Victor, but it's just that I thought, oh my goodness, we're losing the data. There's nothing we can do about it. Victor hasn't got any of Mr. Anonymous's original emails anymore. They're all gone. They're deleted by the Web TV system. His Web TV system also doesn't allow him to analyze IP addresses and headers, as I believe it.
That could be one reason why he was chosen as well, because it's a kind of a disappearing box that nobody can track anyone through.
That's why I was saying that this is what skeptics would say. They said that they might say that a skeptic, sorry, I'll start that sentence again. A skeptic might say that understanding the limitations of Web TV, this could therefore provide a safe haven for a potential hoaxer to release this information without being traced very easily.
Right.
Now, I don't believe that that's the case, but in the interests of honest research, that's the context that we know that Victor is operating in. And there's another fact here that needs to be understood, and I need to state this, considering we're dealing with facts, and all of this is to be found on the Serpo thread in the forum, that Victor himself he's a journalist by instinct, and he's a trained journalist. And I'm completely satisfied that his integrity is solid. I know he cares about this. I know he's trying to do his best. But also, he has, in the interests of neat presentation, he has cut and pasted different messages from different people to provide a more readable interim release by Anonymous. And what's important to say in this context, and this is where the story starts to get just a fraction confusing, is that there's not just one Mr. Anonymous anyway. There are three of them, although one of them is in the majority, as it were. According to Victor, the person who we casually refer to as Mr. Anonymous is somebody who sends 85% of the information through. There's a different source who sends a further 13% of the information through. And finally, there's what Victor calls a ghost, which is a 2% source who sends little snippets of information through every now and then from a military email address that immediately cancels itself every time so that it won't accept return messages. Now, of course, any of your listeners who are in the military or ex-military will know that this is a military trick. And so there's something coming through from a military background. But in all the information that we've got from Mr. Anonymous, which essentially I've just copied and pasted onto the website as an archive, we don't know which bits of information have come from which source. And I don't even know if Victor can tell us, because it's all been deleted.
Okay, fair enough. Good deal. In the interest of keeping podcasting etiquette, we're not going to be able to get to all these questions today. You know, with, it's such a big story and there's so much to it that there's no way we can cover everything. So I'm going to skip around here a little bit, and I want to get to something that came up last night on our website that poses yet another potential credibility issue on Victor Martinez. And that is that it was discovered that there is a gentleman named Mr. Thorne who has appeared, and there's a document out there that has Victor Martinez's email address, but Mr. Thorne's name. It's either Richard Thorne or Victor Thorne. And I guess the question is Victor Martinez Mr. Thorne or not? And have you asked Victor that directly? And if you have asked him, what did he say about it?
Okay, thanks. Yeah. I was astonished when that came up. I was really surprised. I'm 99.9% sure that this is an error in the one document which somebody very cleverly, and I must say hats off to them for finding this, I don't know how they found it, but basically what it is, it's an article with Victor Thorne's name and then Victor Martinez's email address right next to it, as if that was Thorne's email address. Now, if you Google Victor Thorne and Victor's email address and you put them together, that's the only time that you'll get that combination of his name and the email address. If you Google Victor Thorne and email, you will get other email addresses for Victor Thorne that do not match. They come from an ordinary ISP, which is cs.com. And as I understand it, cs.com requires a proper PC, you know, and it works on an ordinary email client such as Outlook.
Right.
I know for a fact that Victor doesn't have a computer. Sometimes that frustrates him because if you send him an attachment, he can't open it and so on and so forth. There's no reason whatsoever why Victor would be using WebTV if he once used a proper PC which was capable of handling what we know to be Victor Thorne's ISP. And on the thread, I also posted an image, a scanned image, which I found on the internet, of an email that had been sent to Victor Thorne, which also gives a completely different email address. Someone else told me that Victor Thorne was, this is from memory, but I believe it was 53 years old or something and lived in Pennsylvania. Victor lives in Los Angeles. He rarely leaves Los Angeles. He doesn't travel very much, as best I know. And I know for a fact that Victor celebrated his 50th birthday on the 9th of December. Taking all of that together, this looks to me like that original bit of information that somebody found that had those two together on the same page, Victor's email address and Victor Thorne's name. I'm sure that that was an error.
Okay.
And I really don't believe this is significant.
Okay, that's fair enough. Again, it's, you know, it's a credibility issue, and if there's only one instance of it, then we'll let that lay. The next thing up for discussion is an individual named Rick Doty. Rick Doty, for a fast background on him, is a certified, unquestionable former intelligence operative of the United States government. And back in the early 90s or late 80s, Rick Doty has the distinction of passing genuine disinformation off to Linda Moulton Howe in the hopes of making Linda Moulton Howe look silly. Now, a lot of people in ufology are, righteously so, very upset at Rick Doty. And when they see him connected to the Serpo Project, a lot of them have, you know, kind of written it off and said, well, Rick Doty's in this thing, then it's just, you know, it's trash or it's no good or what have you. So I guess my question to you is, what is Rick Doty's involvement, and is he actually steering this thing?
Okay, I understand the question and the reasons for it. But what interests me is that people believe that Rick Doty is in some way involved with this. It seems to me that unless there's anything that people know which I don't, and I guess that's always possible, Rick's only connection with the Serpo story has been that he appeared on the Coast to Coast AM show with George Norway back on the, I think it was the 6th of December. And Rick didn't muscle his way into that. I mean, it's like if Rick was, I don't know, in some way operating under orders, he sure didn't behave like that at all, because he came in at my request. What the history of that show was that I was suddenly received an email from the producer of the show saying that they had a cancellation with 24 hours notice, and could I come on air for 3 hours to talk about this? Now, I'd never been on air before in all my life to anybody. I'd never spoken to a group larger than about 20 people. And suddenly I was being asked to talk for 3 hours to 10 million people. And I thought, hey, wait a minute here, I'm going to need a bit of support. And so I asked Victor who he could recommend to come on the show with me. And I was also very aware that nobody knew who on earth I was, and that somebody of the caliber of George Norrie would, and all his listeners, would want to have somebody who they'd heard of before. And Victor understood this, and he recommended that I contact Whitley Strieber, Howard Menger, or Menger, Bob Reed from Florida, Rick Doty, he mentioned, Jim Mars, Paul McGovern, and Gene Luskowski. Those latter two, Gene and Paul, were people who made early supportive posts and in support of Mr. Anonymous's information that you'll see on the website. And I emailed all of them. Oh, sorry, and also Dan Smith. Okay. I emailed all of those people saying, hey, listen, guys, is there anyone who can give me a hand, because I kind of feel a bit exposed here and out of my depth. And Gene and Paul didn't respond. Bob Reed said no. Howard Menger didn't respond. Jim Mars did, but then we got ourselves confused. He wasn't able to make the show. I think he got caught in a snowstorm in Texas or, I don't know, something like that. He was willing to come on, but he never made it. Whitley Strieber said, yeah, okay, I'll do it. And he was on the show. Dan Smith said, okay, I'll help you out if you need help. But then he withdrew once he realized that I wasn't going to be on my own with it, because nobody knew who he was either. And then Rick Doty said, okay, I'll do it. And so it's actually really important to state this, that Rick was invited on by myself. If I had not done that, he would not have been there. And the bottom line is that even if Rick Doty didn't exist, or even if somebody had put a bullet in his head back in the early 90s, and I know that some people really wanted to do that, this wouldn't affect the story one iota. This isn't being sourced from him. He's not even involved in it beyond his appearance on the Coast to Coast show. And a lot of people are adding two and two and making five or even 55. Rick's just not part of this.
So basically, Rick Doty's only involvement is that you asked him to help out because you're in over your head going on to Coast to Coast AM. I mean, that's absolutely believable and plausible in my book. The next thing is Anon's cohorts are listed or identified as members of DIA-6. I mean, it's a real clandestine cloak and dagger, black operations sounding little piece of nomenclature here that, you know, always kind of interests me when people use the alphabet soup and numbers and trying to make things sound real undercover. Do you have any information that verifies that this characterization of these people is correct or in any way, relative to what they really are, who they are, or how they identify themselves? That you know of?
Yeah, this is a good question as well, because in terms of just nailing down what we know and what we don't know and how we know it, this now comes from Victor. The moniker DIA-6, that's his abbreviation for it. It's not something I believe that they call themselves or anybody else has called it. This is just like in emails, this is how Victor just calls them. This hasn't been anything that Anonymous has said in public. This is something that Anonymous has told Victor, and Victor told me, and so I put it on the website. And the information that I understand to be the case is that these six people operating as a group, and Mr. Anonymous, which we need to remember means the 85% Mr. Anonymous, is kind of like a spokesperson of this group, and this group consists of three current members and three retired members of the Defense Intelligence Agency. But as I said, the important thing to bear in mind as a fact is that there's no verification for that. I need to be very careful about what I'm saying here, because I'm not implying or not even believing that this is Victor's invention, but it's just like if we're laying everything out on a huge table to look at it, that class of information is like one, it's like it's even further behind the lines of what I actually know myself through my own experience.
Now, the next question here is, you know, we heard that on AboveTopSecret.com, we heard that there have actually been threats made against some of the people involved with SERPO. That's just a really scary and crazy situation. And, you know, I guess we really would like, you know, for you to expound on that a little bit if you could. Obviously, we don't know who made the threats, and we don't even know what threats were actually made against whoever, you know, they were made against. And what can you tell us about the threats involved in this?
Right. I wasn't expecting this question, and I should have been. So let me just compose myself very rapidly.
Absolutely.
The reason for my not wanting to lay this out on the table is because we don't know whether the threats we received were real or not. I can give, and so therefore it might actually be a genuine distraction. It might be a huge wild goose chase to start putting this on the table, because then everyone gets very excited and it starts to feel like an X-File episode, and actually that's not necessarily the case. It might be being over dramatic. What essentially happened was that I received an email out of the blue. Sorry, I should say Victor Martinez and myself. We received an email out of the blue from which apparently came from Washington, and it looked very credible to me. I'm not willing to publish this email because I do think it would be over dramatic. At the same time, I'm certainly not going to delete it, and I will make this public if the whole story goes absolutely stone cold. And we're picking over the bones in 6 months' time, then of course I'll release all this stuff. But for the moment, what happened was I received an email that sounded, for all the world, to my naive eyes, that this came from a Washington spook who basically asked us what our political intentions were. Were we trying to embarrass the administration? Did we have a ringer in the White House press pool? Asked a whole bunch of questions about, you know, who are you and what are your intentions and so on and so forth, and then asked me if I wanted to do a deal. And then said, now look, you know, you wouldn't want to visit from the FBI now, would you?
Wow.
And what happened after that was Victor and I, I immediately phoned him. Because, I mean, I'm just a civilian. I never received an email like this in my life, you know. And I wasn't fazed by it, but I thought, okay, we need to think very carefully about what we do here. And Victor, at that time, had already been in touch with Mr. Anonymous and said to him, what do we do, you know, because is this something you know about? Because even Victor didn't really understand the context in which Mr. Anonymous was operating. Mr. Anonymous said, don't do a thing, we'll handle it. And so we didn't do anything at all. 2 weeks later, sorry, 2 days later, on the 10th of December, this came in on the 8th of December, which, coincidentally or not, was 2 days after the Coast to Coast interview. And this email came through to the I can't remember whether it came through on the website contact form to my personal email address. I'm sorry, I can't remember that right now. 2 days later, on the 10th of December, after we had done nothing at all, we got another email from the same guy that was a complete climb down. All the threats were removed, and he said, basically, if we're pushed, this is going to be the official position on SERPO. We're going to deny it, but we're going to tell you that we're continuing to look in our files. Which, to me, and he also said, if the photos appear, then we're going to have to take that as it comes. Wow. And reading between the lines, that suggested to me that they were leaving themselves open for the possibility of reversing their denial that Project SERPO was a reality. In other words, we'll continue to look, and so that if they did find themselves pressurized by any external events beyond their control, then they would say, hey, you know, we just found this in the files. This is amazing. What a gee whiz, you know. And they never said categorically that this didn't exist. They just said they were continuing to look. And all I can say is that it smelt real to me. But we know that the name he gave is not real. But then if he's a spook, we shouldn't be surprised at that. He cloned his IP address, and maybe that shouldn't surprise us. And he's not responded to any further messages, and maybe that shouldn't surprise us either. And so one of two things is true. Either it is exactly as it seems, and the significance of it being exactly as it seems is not all the cloak and dagger drama about the fact that we received a threat, and then the threat was retracted, but the fact that Mr. Anonymous said that he would handle it, and the guy who sent the email, if it was real, was behaving exactly as if he'd been leaned on by somebody who had access to a bigger picture and quite a lot of power. And so that, to me, is reasonably significant. On the other hand, the whole thing could have been staged. The whole thing could have been elaborately choreographed to give us the impression that there was something really real going on. If we didn't believe it before, then you better believe it now. But the problem with that, in my own personal view, is that if that was choreographed, it was extremely well done. It was very cleverly done. It was the kind of, you know, it's like they would have gone over every word of that email to make sure that it was authentic, that there were no spelling mistakes, that the whole thing seemed as real as possible. And it was a very sophisticated little hoax, if it was a hoax. And that doesn't square with the release of information from Anonymous that we've been getting through, because the truth is that Mr. Anonymous has not been operating in a sophisticated way. His information has been unscientific. It contains spelling mistakes. It contains errors of syntax and grammar. Every now and then he contradicts himself. He doesn't contradict himself, but he changes his information. For those of your listeners who have been following the story and reading everything on the website, it's about 15,000 words there, but it reads like a story. It doesn't read like something that's been a cleverly crafted, deliberate disinformation campaign. And this has been the point that I've wanted to bring to people's attention right from the beginning, that if this was disinformation or if it was a hoax, the purpose of disinformation or a hoax is to get people to believe it. But there's so many parts of this story that people have been crying hoax simply because they take one look at it and think, this isn't true, this isn't true, therefore the whole thing's a hoax. They would have done it better than that.
Bill, if I could jump in for a second here. Looking back to 1965, do you think this was an elaborate hoax? Back then, the Defense Intelligence Agency was tasked with creating Cold War disinformation, and that was part of their mandate. So could this have been a purposeful hoax of the era to convince the Soviet Union that we were in collusion with aliens and in a partnership to gain their advanced technology?
Maybe. It's got to be on the hypothesis list. And the hypothesis list is actually quite long. I can think of a dozen different hypotheses. I'm perfectly willing to share my two favorite ones. And believe me, I've given this a lot of thought. I've been thinking about this night and day for the last 10 weeks. But I know that between us, we can probably cook up at least 20 different possibilities of what on earth may be happening here. I don't know much about the DIA. Remember, I'm a Brit. I hadn't even heard of the DIA before November. And so if what you say is correct, that they were primarily, you know, that there's no reason to assume that they were concerned with anything extraterrestrial back in the 1960s, then, of course, we've got to take what you say seriously.
Sure. Right. You know, just to interject a little point here. When one looks at this situation, and I have to say that I personally believe that Bill Ryan is at the very least the innocent messenger, and at the very most a guy who has absolutely no interest in this beyond presenting it exactly as he said he is, and I appreciate that. I really do. I'm convinced that if this turns out to be another hoax, then so be it. But I'm convinced that you're absolutely not involved in that end of this at all. And well, I want you to know that from my heart.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And Bill, you mentioned you had two of your favorite hypotheses related to this. Perhaps you'd like to share those with us.
Yeah, right. My first hypothesis, before I thought of the second one, was actually that this was a standard disinformation ploy that was designed to get everyone on the edge of their seats, to get everyone involved. They may have been hoping that someone was going to pick up this ball and run with it. I might have been doing exactly what somebody was hoping and designing to happen. I may be a patsy. And that the whole thing was designed to be a precursor to the real release that is due to happen soon. Now, I just need to say that I've heard from a couple of fairly deep insiders, and I'm really not in a position to be drawn on this, that there is to be a significant disclosure in 2006. I've heard this from two separate sources. I'm not in a position to evaluate that. I just present this as data. It might be nonsense. I have no idea. But if you think about it, it would not be impossible for this story to be sent down the lines to prime the pump, to get people thinking about it, to gauge reaction, and then suddenly, maybe in a month or two's time, the U.S. government comes out and they prove that SOPO is a hoax, and they say, however, let's tell you what really happened. They get to be the heroes and they live happily ever after and so on and so forth. I get to be the fall guy, but actually, guess what? We've got disclosure. So I don't mind that if that's the case.
Yeah, that's actually very interesting. Sorry to interrupt. That it feels, that portrayal of your hypothesis feels as though SOPO is sort of a focus group to determine exactly how the disclosure would happen that could be coming.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's not impossible. And many of your listeners who understand how disinformation has been used in the past and the kind of problems that the government has in trying to reveal this huge lump under the carpet of all this information that's amassed in the last 60-odd years, we'll understand how that could be a hypothesis. Let me also say, just to further whet your listeners' appetites, is that I did receive an email on the SOPO contact form, and believe me, I'm getting astonishing things coming through on the SOPO contact form. Not all to do with SOPO at all, by any means. Somebody who purported to be from Los Alamos and the LANL, and who said very simply and very straight that the SOPO story was 80% true, contained 20% fiction, and was part of an organized release campaign, period. And, I mean, I replied to that email so fast you couldn't see my hands move and it bounced. I tried every combination of the components of the email address, everything's bounced. I checked the IP address. It goes to Albuquerque. Could it have been a hoax? Easily. I have no idea. This is just one of these other things that doesn't mean anything. I mean, it doesn't mean anything in epistemological terms. It's like, do we know anything as a result of that? The answer is no, we don't. It just makes us scratch our heads even more. Right. But the reason why I now favor my second hypothesis, which I'd just like to elaborate, is because if this is disinformation, I just don't think it's being done very well. I think that, you know, that it's too clumsy. It's not sophisticated. As I mentioned at some length at the Coast to Coast show, you can go down to your local bookstore and you can buy books by science fiction writers that present believable worlds to us. And the first thing that a writer does when they're creating a believable world is they get hold of a physicist and make sure that all the numbers are right, to make sure that the physics works. One of the very first things we're told here by Anonymous is that the physics doesn't work and that the numbers are all wrong. I mean, that's laying himself open to a huge vulnerability for all the scientists to cry foul and dismiss the whole story. A hoaxer or a disinformation specialist just wouldn't do that. They would make sure that the whole thing was far more credible at the outset. And that's my main reason for actually dismissing this hypothesis. My second hypothesis is that Mr. Anonymous, which actually I now lean to favoring, is that Mr. Anonymous is absolutely for real, and he doesn't have access to the report, and he doesn't have access to the photographs. Sorry, I haven't mentioned the report before. Apparently there is a 3,000-page report, which of course will be one of the most classified documents in existence, heavily under lock and key, underground somewhere. And the idea that this retired member of the DIA has got casual access to this is just a little bit of, it's not impossible, but it's a stretch of the imagination. What's much more likely, if we take this at face value, is that Mr. Anonymous is reporting something indirectly from information that is either, well, it's either supplied to him by another person, and that other person themselves may be consulting their memory, or may have had access to the report not yesterday, but maybe 20 years ago. I think it's not at all unlikely that Mr. Anonymous himself is being fed information by somebody else, possibly by telephone calls, and then he's making hurried notes, or maybe by tape and it's being transcribed. And that would account for the generalities, for the mistakes, for the presence of unscientific information or an unscientific context, and would also account for the absence of the photographs. If, for instance, all of this is being relayed to Mr. Anonymous by somebody who maybe was involved in the project himself 20 years ago, that person may be retired and living in Thailand or Australia or South Africa, and maybe he's got the photographs in a shoebox under his bed. And everyone's crying foul, saying, well, where are the photographs? Where are the photographs? As if Mr. Anonymous had the 3,000-page document sitting on his coffee table like a Sears catalogue, and he could just go down to Kinko's and get the whole thing photocopied. I mean, it's just not like that. Because we don't know the context, we have to use our imagination to think of good reasons why Mr. Anonymous may not be able to provide us with everything that you and I and all your listeners would like to have in terms of proof. We'd like to have hard information. We'd like to have photographs. We'd like to have a scanned image of the catalogue. We'd like to know what the code words really were. It may be that Mr. Anonymous, that this is actually beyond Mr. Anonymous's control himself. And if you think about it, that would explain absolutely everything that people are demanding to be accounted for. It doesn't help us because it still doesn't provide us with proof. We're still not at the we're nowhere near the point where you can go to the New York Times and say, hey, look, you know, I think this is your tomorrow's front page story. It would last for as long as it would take for him to consult his science correspondent. We're just not there yet. And the other final point, if I may make it, is that there's just a lot of evidence that Mr. Anonymous doesn't understand PR. And if he's an ex-military guy, or an ex-intelligence guy, why should he understand PR? And if he's elderly, And if you think about it, he would be at least 70 years old if he was involved in the project himself in some way. And if he was, say, 45 years old in 1965 when the project started, then he'd be 80 years old now. We're talking about, and it's like, in order to kind of calibrate that against your experience, you've got to think of your grandfather or your great uncle. Now, how aware are they of the sophistications of PR requirements in the 21st century? Probably not very. This guy's just telling a story. And he's telling a story as if he's hoping that the more of the story he tells, the more we'll believe it. And the truth is that that's not the way it works. We've heard lots of the story, and a lot of people are fascinated by it. But we don't need more accounts of strange animals, or we don't need more accounts of the team members' logs, or we don't need, more narrative storytelling. We need to have something specific, because that's the only thing that's going to serve as any kind of proof. And at the moment, there's no evidence that Mr. Anonymous really understands what's necessary. And if Mr. Anonymous ever listens to this, I do not say this with any personal criticism at all. It's like my whole watchword in this whole thing is, let's support the guy, let's hang out for more information, give us the photographs, give us one photograph, give us anything at all that we can get a handle on and start to analyze in real terms. And what some of your listeners may pick up very legitimately from how I'm explaining this is that personally I'm very frustrated. I am being an honest messenger. I wish I could sit down with Mr. Anonymous, have a cup of coffee, and talk him through what I think is needed in order for this story to fly. I don't have access to him. I don't have access to me even indirectly. I'm getting 50 emails a day from people saying, where are the photographs? And the only honest answer I can give is, I don't know.
So we really sent 12 people to a foreign alien planet, and they spent several years there, and we had an exchange program. Or, as RATS Bill pointed out, it could have been a hoax, but a hoax done by our government back in the 60s in the hopes of fooling the Soviets in the height of the Cold War into thinking we actually had alien technology and keep them frightened to death that we could use it against them. Or this is a hoax that's being perpetrated by people today on the internet, but they've stumbled into a new reality or a new paradigm that's presented itself on the internet by virtue of our website above topsecret.com. And what I mean by this is that 5 years ago, you could have pulled a hoax like this off on the internet and really taken it pretty far. You could have presented the pictures, because what you had 5 years ago on the internet were two fanatical factions that were arguing these situations. On the one hand, you have the true believers who you could take a picture of a Barbie doll and a G.I. Joe standing in front of a wall and say, there's the aliens, on the White House lawn. They're here. They've landed. And these people would have gone, oh, great. The aliens are here and all my dreams have come true. And on the other side of that fence, you had the fanatical skeptics whose mind were so closed that they were cynical and they weren't going to believe anything anyway. So when these skeptics blew out the pictures as being phony or whatever, the bad science, the rest of it, the true believers didn't believe them and didn't, give a darn about what they had to say anyway. So you could kind of slide through. I think what's happened is, via our website, we have a new breed of people. Yes, we're open-minded. Yes, we're willing to listen. And yes, we will get to the truth. Yes, we're open-minded, but you can't phony anything. You're not going to get anything phony past us, because we do have the experts. And we will find out what the truth is. So I think this is a heck of a testament. And I really appreciate you being here, Bill. And we've enjoyed it. And we'll see what happens. The truth will come out in time. Thanks again.
You too.
And anything you'd like to say in closing, lay it on us.
I'd like to thank you for inviting me on and for listening to me. Anybody who wants to communicate with me can do this. They can jump into the thread. That's a very intelligent, civilized thread. They can communicate with me through the website contact form. It's always a pleasure to hear from anybody who's got a sincere, intelligent interest in this. And just to close, just as a balance to what you were saying, my $10 is that we haven't heard the last of this. And I think this is real. I think that the thing about the photographs is a real risk, because the nature of proof, as we've been discussing in the last hour, is that it would be such a tragedy if this were a true story. But behind that true story is an elderly man who's doing his best, who's out of his depth because he's never done anything like this before. He's being given a major hassle by those factions in the US government who don't want this released. And maybe he's not in a position to deliver what he hoped he would be able to with the photographs. And if all that is the case, he may go back where he came from, faced with a barrage of what he perceives to be ungrateful criticism. And then, as far as the world is concerned, they'll say, well, we knew it, photographs never appeared, and maybe they're still there in someone's shoebox under their bed. Wouldn't that be sad? So my fingers are still crossed, and they're going to stay that way.
Well, okay, now we're back to the 2 out of 3 amigos recorded this evening, and wow, all I have to say is wow.
Yeah, that was that really was, you know, you hear interviews, and one of the things that really annoys me is when a guy like this, who is potentially controversial, and obviously people have a lot of questions for him, but one thing that really annoys me when people interview guys like this, and they never let the guy spit it out, you know, they're constantly want to drive the conversation, steer it, and I understand on broadcast radio they've got a lot of issues with commercials and time slots, and I think that was one benefit that we had doing this the way we did it. We just basically let the man tell his story, and I thought that came out pretty well.
And I'm particularly happy that we waited this long. When the story first came out, we made contact, and we were trying to get a podcast interview sooner. But as it turns out, I think we would have tried to rip him to shreds.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
when we
yeah.
First did this.
Yeah, I mean, on first blush, we both were almost laughing out, gut laughing out loud over this deal. And it's gotten a little bit more interesting since then, without a doubt.
Yeah, I've certainly found myself leaning towards the sort of the theory that I was talking about in the interview, is that this could possibly have been a disinformation campaign back in the mid-60s or early 60s and into the 70s by the Defense Intelligence Agency. That was one of their mandates, was to create confusing disinformation in the Cold War.
Yeah, and that's a really good logical possibility. I'm out on this. I mean, obviously the last possibility in my mind is that we actually sent 12 people to another planet with 9,000 pounds of gear. But, you know, I would say the top possibility in my mind is obviously this thing is purely a hoax. A very well planned and well carried out hoax, even to the parts that Bill touched on about how, you know, it's just so poorly put together that, you know, if somebody was trying to hoax it, that they just would have done a better job. Well, I don't know about that. I mean, if you really wanted to make it look real, then you make it look real. I mean,
you make it look amateur.
Exactly.
Right.
And I hold with my theory that because it is a hoax, ATS, AboveTopSecret.com, and our membership just really may have shut this thing down. If no photographs are forthcoming, I really believe that the membership at AboveTopSecret.com, because of the combination of very intelligent people, skeptical by nature, yet very open-minded and willing to listen. But when you do present it, you better back it up. And I think that the guys involved in this have caught that. And I bet you we just never see any pictures.
I tend to think that there's something here that's truthful. There's aspects of the story that there's some very significant plausibility. And I think, now I don't know if part of that plausibility is an alien exchange program. But, but you know, who knows?
Right.
We, you know, you and I are certainly of the belief that there are, you know, intelligent civilizations out there.
No
so,
doubt.
That's not in the realm of impossibility to us. However, I think there's something in this story. There's some degree of truth. Whether it's 80% or 20%, we'll know sooner or later.
Right. I mean, I look at the night sky like any other person, and I absolutely do not believe we're the only intelligent beings in this vast universe. However, I also do not believe that our government is capable of pulling something like this off, and nobody knowing about it until a guy put up a website called Serpo.org. That's the part that I have a real hard time with. But,
yeah,
you know what?
Especially the Defense Intelligence Agency, the first 4 years of their life.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I would be very thrilled to death to eat crow over this if it turns out different.
Okay. Well, that was an excellent special edition of the Two Out of Three Amigos Conspiracy Show.
I hope everyone else thinks so. All seven people that listen to it.
This might push us into the double digits, I think.
Wow, we might hit 11. All right, my friend, it was great.
It was awesome. Good night.
Have a good night.